it is coming. So it's something that a lot of people are just trying to get in front of. And
welcome to Mass MEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. Mass MEP believes that there's some element to a manufacturer's business, whether it's finding inefficiencies, strengthening internal processes, or unlocking growth that can extend the firm beyond its current limitations.
Welcome to the Mass MEP Manufacturing Podcast. I'm your host, Haley Steele, Marketing Coordinator. This week, we manufactured our podcast a little differently and decided to take you on a journey in our Hacker Hour. Hacker Hour was done with our Advanced Manufacturing Technology Manager, Rich Sullivan, and our SMEs, which are subject matter experts on cybersecurity, CyberSaint, and Exalytic. Let's listen to Rich in a fireside chat with Jim Seropoulos, the Exalytic principal, and Derek Bauer and Patrick O'Brien, account executives with CyberSaint Security.
We put this together as we're doing Cybersecurity Month. As we know, even Governor Baker signed an official proclamation on behalf of the Commonwealth to formally announce Massachusetts Cybersecurity Month. So we've put this event together. It's just we've called it Live Hacker Prevention Hour. We just want to welcome everyone this morning, and it's just for us to discuss cybersecurity and the impact it makes across Massachusetts and obviously beyond that. So we put together a little table talk, as we like to call it, with a couple of our favorite cybersecurity third parties and our subject matter experts. We have Jim Seropoulos on with us from Exalytic, and we will also have two individuals joining us from CyberSaint, Derek Bauer and Patrick O'Brien. They're both account executives, and they'll be jumping in throughout the webinar today and our live broadcast. So we'll have them come in. They'll talk to us a little bit about what's happening in the cybersecurity world. But before we bring everybody in, we do have Rich Sullivan with us this morning. He is our Advanced Manufacturing Technology Manager with Mass MEP. He'll kind of get the conversation started on insight on how we work with CyberSaint and we work with Exalytic to be your trusted advisors in cybersecurity and also in CMMC. As we all know, in today's climate, cybersecurity should be a priority as we obviously are spending more time online conducting life's work at home. So Rich, do you wanna give the audience a little bit of background on Mass MEP and where we are with cybersecurity?
Sure, thanks, Haley. First of all, welcome everyone. Hope you can hear me. Actually, I have a handful of slides. We've all been kind of killed by PowerPoint presentations during this whole COVID mess. And I didn't wanna do that to people this time, but I just got literally like three or four slides I wanted to show you real quick, and then a video that might sort of explain where we're coming from today. Mass MEP, let me actually start my screen sharing, see if that works. As Haley mentioned, you know, we are the trusted advisor. We are largely your tax dollars at work. You know, we get money from the federal government. It's a nationwide program, and we get money from the state government as well. And our job basically is to help small manufacturing companies remain competitive and successful. We do that through operational excellence, efficiency programs, you know, bottom line stuff. We also have top line services in the sales and marketing services and consulting that we offer. And we have advanced technology, advanced manufacturing technologies that we're introducing companies to, whether it's robotics or additive manufacturing, Internet of Things, that kind of stuff. And cybersecurity is part of that. And we feel that it's fundamental or foundational rather to smart manufacturing technology, because you can't be adding all kinds of things to your computer network and not have them secure, because it just creates another attack surface for hackers to get into. So we're gonna have a casual discussion today with a couple of companies that we've partnered with on the cybersecurity side of things. And we'll get started momentarily. So, as I said, MassMEP is the Massachusetts affiliate of the Manufacturing Extension Partnership, which is part of the national NIST-MEP network of MEP centers. So we operate in every state and Puerto Rico. And again, our job is to help small manufacturers remain competitive. And we all report up to the National Institute of Standards and Technology on the federal side. And that's where a lot of the cybersecurity information and frameworks and guidance are coming from, as well as smart manufacturing technologies. So today we're going to have Jim Seropoulos from Exalytic and Patrick O'Brien and/or Derek Bauer. Derek, I apologize for not putting your contact info up there, but you can let Patrick deal with all the phone calls. So Exalytic, handles our ISO solutions. Any company that's already ISO 9000 certified might consider going the ISO 27001 route for cybersecurity. Or if you're doing business internationally, ISO is a globally recognized standard. CyberSaint is also local to us, and they handle most of our DFARS and CMMC, or soon-to-be CMMC requirements. That's primarily the defense industrial base that is required to comply with that kind of stuff. Before we go on, I just want to show a quick video. This was done by one of our Ohio MEP affiliates, and it's about their clients, very small company. Most of our manufacturers are in the 10 to 50 employee range for the most part, and the same with most of the national network clients. So just watch this, it's pretty quick.
I get this call, and it's my office manager, and when we finally realized, I will never forget that moment, sinking feeling in your stomach. I mean, it's hard to describe. Where we'd been hounding this customer that normally is a very good payer, and she's like, they showed me where they paid. We finally realized that it went to the wrong account. Spear phishing is a pointed attack where it's directed towards somebody or someone. They were able to get into our email, live within our day-to-day life. It was hard for me to believe that a company like us and or our size would garner that kind of attention, that would be worth their time to come after somebody like us, but it is. We're at Cincinnati Crane. We manufacture overhead cranes. So what makes us different than our competitors is the ability to build long span box girder cranes, larger cranes. We have fabricators, welders, electricians, technicians. It's not unusual that one day somebody's in the shop fabricating a crane, and then the next day they're out in the field installing the crane.
Being a small business, it's important to have that camaraderie that we've built successfully here with our people, their family, and it shows in everything we do.
We were the victims of a cyber attack in late 17, and was a spear phishing campaign.
Hackers send you an email. They make you believe that it is real.
When that happened, I had no choice but to lay off some people, and that was really hard for us. It's hard for me. We had a great relationship with Texol, and when this happened, we really didn't know, where to go or what to do.
Texol is the Southwest Ohio Manufacturing Extension Partnership, which is part of the MEP National Network. We were so glad that Tony called us, because that's exactly what we want our manufacturers to feel like. No matter what the issue is, give us a call and let us be part of that solution.
I personally don't understand the inclination to not talk about this when it happens to you.
We really feel like we've learned a lot from this experience. And if anyone can learn from our mistakes, businesses should educate themselves, hire a cybersecurity expert, encrypt their data, and make longer passwords.
Find an MEP, find somebody with the expertise that can help you firm up your defenses in cybersecurity. This is no longer something that you can opt to do. This is a part of doing business today. And unfortunately, I don't see that changing. We were one company that had an exposure. Now, I can think off the top of my head of over 100 companies that were affected by our cyber attack.
Manufacturing is the backbone of the American economy. And so small businesses like ours fuel that system.
What we do is important. It's important to manufacturing, it's important to other companies, and we're helping them be successful. We've finally just started to make the turn from this burden. We've been through a challenging time. We've made our way through it, and we're excited about the future. We've put that behind us. We're stronger because of it. We're ready to get back to business.
All right. So why is cybersecurity important? Well, this is a Lockheed F-35 fighter jet, the most advanced fighter plane on the planet when it came out. And around the same time that this was introduced, lo and behold, the Chinese had an extremely similar version of their own fighter jet with the same capabilities. This is one of those things where, you know, it wasn't Lockheed that got hacked and, you know, someone stole every blueprint for that plane. It was hundreds of subcontractors that were small companies and very often mom and pop shops that were making small parts, but all those parts make up a whole. And somebody was able to steal enough of those drawings and prints and specs and make their own plane. So this is kind of like, and what the guy said in the video about how this doesn't just affect them. You know, 100 companies were affected by that one cyber attack that he had. And this kind of like, you know, this whole wearing masks during the pandemic, you know, it's not about you. I mean, your mask isn't protecting you. Your mask is protecting others and slowing down the spread. And we're all part of this community that we have to interact with. And really, if you're cybersecurity isn't strong enough and hackers can get in and use your network and your servers and your computers as an attack vector to attack other companies, then you're not helping matters at all. So, you know, we realize that this is an issue and everybody realizes this is an issue. So we had to figure out something to do to help our clients. And we're not cybersecurity experts. But we know some cybersecurity experts, and we're able to connect with them and help our clients. So today we've got Jim Seropoulos, as I mentioned, and apparently we have Derek Bauer. Sorry if the logo's popping up. And so just to start things off, Derek, you've worked with dozens of MassMEP clients now, and help them through the DFARS compliance and very soon to be CMMC, which is the Cybersecurity Maturity Model Certification, which is going to be a lot more strict, I guess, and actually enforced contractually now, where DFARS was more of a, we really hope you'll do this. So what are you typically seeing? Like what size clients you're generally dealing with of ours, and what are the biggest challenges and the low hanging fruit, I guess?
So essentially what we've really seen is a lot of people coming to us. So you're right, for DFARS, CMMC. I mean, we work with a whole variety of different frameworks, but it's usually a typical company size for people looking to get involved in this and start their process are, you know, from pop-up shops that are, you know, 1 to 5 people all the way up to, you know, couple hundred people. So it really varies. The biggest challenge for most of these companies is where do we start? So a lot of these people come in and really have no idea what they're looking for, what they have to do to reach this compliance level. And it's a problem that, you know, a lot of people, I mean, it's coming up, and it's, you know, the biggest issue right now is, you know, kind of just educating people on what you essentially need to do to start this process and reach that compliance level. So, I mean, everyone typically from that starting point is just lost on, you know, hey, we're here for a reason. We know this is something that's going to be coming up soon for us. We have a contract down the road that this is just, you know, this certification that we kind of need. And the biggest thing we've seen is just, you know, where do we get going and how do we do that? So our job is to, you know, kind of educate you on the matter, make sure that we can provide you the services and the help you need to make sure that, you know, you're getting to that point to win those contracts and make sure that, you know, you're reaching that compliance level to help make sure that everything's secure on your end.
Yeah, that's a good point. And to your point about multiple frameworks, realize that your platform is sort of framework agnostic, basically. And you know, there are a ton of different security frameworks, and a framework basically is just a big long list of things you gotta keep in mind and make sure that you have in place. And it is daunting. It's you know, in some cases there are 100 or more points you have to look at. And basically, if you think of it like your home security, I mean, you put locks on your doors, you know, and windows, and your cars have locks, and it's basically there's no such thing as 100% security, but yeah. Ideally, if you're more secure than the next guy, then the next guy is going to get attacked and you're not going to, basically. And that's and we've got, you know, we could have med device companies that have to comply with HIPAA to some extent. There might be some companies that are taking credit card payments that need PCI compliance. There's a whole slew of these things. And, you know, we think that the majority of our companies or clients are going to be kind of in the ISO and DFAR / CMMC.
And you made a great point there too, when bringing up, I mean, it's as simple as, you know, locking the doors to the facility or the office, making sure that you have passwords on your computers. Because it's just as easy as someone, you know, walking through the front door. I know some of the facilities that we've came and visited, done on sites with, you know, that they're kind of bigger manufacturing, you know, warehouses or buildings. And sometimes you can get lost in the mix. But it's as simple as someone just coming in, walking up to a computer. Maybe it's not locked after you use it. The password's not as strong. Something as simple as that. And it could take, you know, a matter of, you know, 5 minutes or so for someone to, you know, potentially corrupt everything and take any of your data. So right. You're right. It's as simple, you know, a lot of it's people related tasks, just, you know, making sure you have the right security set up to make sure that, you know, you're making it, you know, a lot more difficult for someone and not making it an easy process for them to just come in and get that information.
Yeah. Yeah. And the advantage that small companies have, I think, is that there are fewer holes to fill in a lot of cases and fewer machines to lock down. Exactly. You know, for the big companies, it's easy just to walk around the building and find an open door.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's 27 doors to this building. Chances are one of them is going to be unlocked.
Yep.
Now, and you walk in there and people are going to think, oh, this person must be a contractor. I don't know. And I've been in situations where, you know, someone walks in the door and you're like, who's that? I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess they should be here.
We could have someone visiting today. We could have someone, you know, coming to fix something, but little do you know, it could be someone
right
for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And that's why, you know, policies and procedures are just important as important as, you know, technical mitigation measures. You know, it's definitely. There was a book that came out years ago. Was it The Art of Deception? It was all about social engineering. Mm-hmm. This guy basically was able to hack into a bunch of different companies without ever touching a computer. I was just making phone calls, asking questions, getting passwords from people. You know, it's just, you don't know what you don't know. And a lot of people, you have this sort of false sense of security, I think. And the idea basically behind all these frameworks and these legislations is just to improve security posture. We talk about security posture, and it's just basically, you know, basic hygiene. It's You know, if you have a lock on the door, make sure it's locked when it's supposed to be, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's more of a reiteration to make sure that, you know, you're actually utilizing these things. And it's
right.
as easy as 1, 2, 3 for someone to get in there. So.
Yeah. I got a friend who leaves his keys in his ashtray in his truck, you know, parked in front of his house. It's, you know, it's nice to be able to do that in some neighborhoods, but it's not a practice you want to maintain.
Yeah, I mean, but it can happen anywhere, right? So
right,
it's
exactly.
Yeah. It's just a matter
of paying off of it. In the case, like, so Talison put in a question and said, you know, for budget range, do I need to be prepared to have a security assessment for CMMC? Mm-hmm. And they're a 17 person shop. And I'm assuming in most of these cases, that's going to be the biggest question, obviously, is always going to be budget and what this is going to cost for them. You guys, can you give them a direction on that, an idea at least?
Yeah, Rich, do you want to go into funding a little bit? We can kind of discuss that.
I don't know much about the funding. I know that you know, we've got several different grant programs.
He does know a lot about the funding. Don't let him trick you on that one. He likes to say that, but he really does.
Well, some companies are qualified for, you know, 50% coverage of this cost, and other ones are covered for 100%. You know, we have grant writers on staff that can walk the people through that process. Basically, it's the state's workforce training fund that covers a lot of this, because we can't, rather than just selling the company a fish, you know, we're teaching them how to fish, and this is a process that requires a fairly decent educational component, especially when it comes to the policies and procedures and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's what, like $8,000-$10,000 for the total package.
Yep,
roughly.
Yep. And then obviously with the required services, if that's a necessity, Tolson said it's a 17 person shop. A lot of companies that we've worked with, they don't usually have an IT presence there. So we have, you know, coordinate a lot of services. We do work with multiple partners that are local. We can either do in shop or online training when you get started, to kind of walk you through the process and the platform and get you kind of familiar with what you're working with. But yeah, I mean, like Rich said, it does kind of vary just based on, you know, if you're eligible for grants or if, you know, those additional services require. But, you know, generally we do try to find a way for it to make from both parties. So we are, you know, we're very flexible with our pricing. We're a small startup company that has kind of, you know, came up in the past few years. So we work with, you know, multi-billion dollar enterprise companies. So. But we were also built off of, you know, companies that are working around DFARS specifically. So we look to make sure that we're flexible enough to work with, you know, anyone that needs our services and make sure we can try and get anything done for you.
Right. You guys were, I mean, founded by an IT expert veteran. And you have, you know, close relationship with Katie Arrington.
Yeah.
DOD. So yeah, it's.
Yeah. We've actually been down to the DC and presented our platform
right
in front of everyone over there. And Katie Arrington's kind of the one taking the lead on CMMC, kind of the face for it. We've, you know, had multiple conversations with her, so we're very familiar with the process. I mean, it is kind of a confusing time with everything going on in the world like it is today. So there have been a lot of delays and pushbacks with everything, but I mean, it is coming. So it's something that a lot of people are just trying to get in front of, and that's what we recommend you doing before it's, you know, it right. shows up on your doorstep the next right. day, and you need to provide some sort of, you know, documentation that you're working on compliance or, you know, trying to, you know, be able to make that contract. And yeah. So
that's kind of like murder hornets.
Yeah.
Jim, what's the typical ISO 27001 customer look like?
Well, from a one person company facility to multiple people, any number of employees, any number of facilities, all that does is changes the complexity of what they need to do, the how much of anything that they have to do in terms of information security. And they could be in just about any industry. Not too long ago, I ran into a company that wanted some ISO work, and come to find out they were nothing more than a printer. to them. What do you have to protect? But they do have a lot to protect, intellectual property. They're doing promotions months, if not years in advance, the planning stages. So they have a lot of information. So if that information leaks out, it could be catastrophic to their customer.
Right. Yeah. Especially if they get information that belongs to their customer. I've gone through the ISO 9000 process personally. It was a long time ago, and it's a crazy amount of documentation, at least it was in my experience. And I imagine once you've been through the ISO 9000 compliance, you're what, half away to 27001?
Well, this is very difficult to say if percentage-wise, if you're half. There is a lot of piggybacking that's going on when it comes to the ISO framework. The standards are using this high-level annex, which pretty much aligns itself in the number of clauses that it has. It starts off with the context of the organization, and it goes on to continuous improvement. But if we were to look at something like the context of the organization, one is telling you to identify the internal and external issues as it relates to your quality management system in terms of 9001. But then when it comes to the information security, it says the exact same thing, but as it relates to your information security. So if you look at this, you could do quality and information security, or you can look at it as my management system as a whole kind of approach. So there are a lot of piggybacking opportunities within the standard, but there are a lot of unique things that the standard throws at us, such as in the controls that it introduces in the annex, at the back of the standard, where it gives you 14 controls that equate to, control clauses that equate to 114 individual requirements per se. But not all of those need to be addressed, so don't get scared by it. The advantage that 27001 has over the other approach is that you don't need to address every single control. For example, let's take password protection, for example. So what if you don't have computers? What if you're still stuck in the old ages using typewriters? So you would go ahead and you would identify all the assets, all the things of value to the organization. In doing so, you would go ahead and perform a risk analysis on the risks that all of these assets are faced with, all the risks that are imposed on you. And then you would go ahead and via a statement of applicability, make your case on what applies and what doesn't apply. And even though we're saying we have 114 controls that we need to address, we may narrow it down to a dozen legitimate controls, but you're making your case as opposed to other approaches that sends you out there and says, well, you have to have a policy on password protection, but I don't have any computers. Well, you have to have a policy. So you get stuck with that dilemma when it comes to other approaches. So 27001 is a logical standard when it comes to companies approaching information security needs. And it's also widely accepted internationally, as you may know. You piggyback 9001 as much as you can. There are commonalities, but there are differences. So once you create a system with one ISO standard, you just look at what's left, what is the other standard introducing, and you just slide that in without having to do too much redoing of any of the work that you have done before.
Good. Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned the 114 domains and the CMMC is going to have, similar. It's got about 17 different domains that it covers. And the nice thing is that they're adjusting that based on company size and how critical their information is, that kind of thing. So the CMMC requirements, like a level one, you may only have to address two or three of those. Derek, what do you think most of our manufacturing clients are going to have to comply with what level of CMMC? And so, how many controls would there be involved?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be control-wise, probably a little bit less than DFARS would have. But we've probably, I'd say, around 100 or so. I'm not exactly positive, but ballpark range, that's what I would guess. And with level compliance, a lot of the people we're working with need to be level 3. So as you're going through in our platform, you're going to be able to see everything updating in real time as you're entering in the information and answering through these controls. And we're going to, you know, map out essentially what you're going to be at after you're answering a certain question. So say the first question is just asking about passwords. As you're going through, it's going to ask if you are currently, you know, resetting your passwords every 3 months or so. If you need to, yes or no, it's pretty simple. And as you're entering in that information, it's going to give you that little level of compliance to the right. So essentially level 1 to level 3 is ballpark range of, you know, the clients that we're working with through MEP.
Yeah,
so
that makes sense.
Yeah. So it's going to be updating in real time, but you're going to be able to see, you know, kind of where you're currently standing. And as you're going through, it's going to be, you know, building out kind of that level of where you guys will be currently sitting at or where you need to be at.
Yeah. I think it certainly makes sense to use a platform. Like you said, you know, you could do all this on paper and spreadsheets and, you know, Word docs, that kind of stuff, but it's virtually impossible to manage that on a regular basis. And this is not one of those, oh, I got to do this and check off this box and be done for the rest of my life. This is a culture shift that really has to happen within an organization, because you have to constantly be aware and you have to constantly watch for the latest and greatest threats, because this environment changes every minute. And, you know, it's not an IT problem. Everybody thinks, oh, so I'll have my computer guy look at that and he'll take care of that and be done, and we'll move on and do the next thing. And it's not the case, because it's a business problem. It's 100% a business issue. So you have to get upper management involved and on board and at least aware of what's going on, because this is about business risk. You know, I mean, it just happens to be that hackers, if they're sitting at a computer in a different country, that's easier for them to get through into your organization through, you know, an IT mechanism. But I mean, it still affects them from a business standpoint, liability standpoint.
And you made a good point before too. A lot of people that we've seen, like I said before, a lot of them don't know where to start. So that's kind of one point we've seen. And a lot of them are going through that manual spreadsheet labored process. And quite frankly, no one really has the time of day to really go through that. So what we're trying to do is make it more simple and time efficient. So you just go in and, you know, kind of cut down that process by weeks, sometimes months, because,
right.
You know, it's messy work, and, you know, we want to make it as easy as possible for you to, and like I said before, it's a lot of these companies that we're seeing come to us, they don't have an IT presence. So a lot of these people are, you know, they're coming in there, you know, there sometimes we've seen like HR people come in and they're just like, hey, you can deal with it. And it's chaotic. And, you know, we just try to simplify the entire process and make sure that, you know, you're getting to that point with the least amount of, you know, time consumption and effort that you guys need to. Because a lot of people, you know, they're doing something else, and the smaller companies don't have the time of day or resources to, you know, to make that IT presence felt or, you know.
Well, that's kind of why we exist. I mean, because most of our clients don't have the internal resources to create and manage an ongoing, you know, continuous improvement program. Because I mean, realistically, they're just worried about getting the next shipment out and getting the invoices out, making payroll. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those issues were what was basically killing a lot of the U.S. manufacturing base. And that's where the DOD and the presidential administration came in and said, you know, we gotta fix this. We gotta come up with some way of propping up these companies and helping them to be more successful and more efficient. Yeah. And this is just another thing that's being piled on top of them. But, you know, if we can make it easier for them and you know, do some of the lifting. Jim, what are you seeing for your organization, your clients that are, or how are your clients able to maintain on a regular basis their information security management system?
Well, the ISO 27001, like other international standards, what it does is it's not on the it's not left up to the company to do the work and you're done with it, so to speak, which is good. Going forward with all security programs, there seems to be some kind of overseeing that goes on. In this case, the 27001 brings in a third-party agency that will be assessing you on a regular basis initially to see that you have created and implemented a successful system, and then on an ongoing basis to see that you are sustaining that system. So it helps you there. So companies that have gone down the path of ISO 27001 don't have much to worry about in terms of sustaining the work that they have done. It works very nicely in that regard. There isn't really much to say in that regard and any fear of a system being created, implemented, and over time deteriorating. So the work that they have done is not going to go to waste. In doing so and having these periodic checks, it also forces you to keep up with the standard and the requirements and your company needs, your internal and external issues, those that are affected by it, et cetera. You're constantly reviewing your present and future state. So you're making improvements into the process. So it's a learning curve. Companies have to work towards protecting assets three ways: the confidentiality, the integrity, and the availability of that data. You focus there on all the assets that you put forth, and you will be pretty successful in that regard.
Yeah, that's again, it comes down to being a business issue, really. One of the bigger questions that a lot of our clients have actually. I've talked to a few companies who just were kind of keeping their heads buried in the sand and hoping this would all go away. It's becoming more and more of an issue, and it's becoming, it's getting closer to the forefront, I think, for a lot of companies. What reasons are you hearing for companies to put this off? In general,
I think you nailed it, that they think that it's going to go away, that it's another one of those things that might pass. But in reality, it's getting a bigger grip on us. It's coming at us from multiple directions. CMMC has shown us, it started off, you know, not too long ago with NIST 800, and then before you know it, CMMC comes into place. 27001 has been around for a while. It was last revised in 2013, so it's been around for a while. It's not something, information security is nothing new. It's just that the attention, the emphasis on it has been renewed, per se.
One of the questions that came up recently was about IoT or IIoT, Industrial Internet of Things, and these sensors and machine tools now that are plugged into the company networks, and in most cases they're connected to the internet because as long as those machine tools are being managed by the manufacturer, we could be somewhere on the other side of the planet. How does that create, you know, more of an attack surface? I mean, how easy is it for someone to break in through like the PLC on a lathe or something? Does that come up as an actual, you know, event that you know of? Either Jim or Derek, you want to jump in, or Patrick? I know Patrick's on here.
Yeah, I just joined here. Thanks, Rich. I'm sorry I'm a little late here, guys. Derek was just updating me.
No worries.
I think one of the things that stuck out to me, a couple things from what I've heard so far and what you just mentioned, Rich, around digitization in general and just kind of how susceptible companies and the business processes that all companies are moving towards are at today. We're working with some of the largest companies in the world, as well as many smaller companies, a lot that have come to us through MassMEP and our great relationship with you guys. And what we've noticed is that as everyone's digitizing, you need a better way to track information systems and how well you're protecting against that, your cyber resiliency, ultimately. And you talked about the changes, and Jim, I think you did a great way summing up the difference from 800, NIST 800-171 and DFARS into CMMC. And I've been doing a lot of reading on it, and it's interesting just the challenge in the market, right, is that cybersecurity is something that's changing every day, and it's very much a public and private sector kind of partnership in how we're going about it today in the world, or at least in the United States of America. I mean, there's a lot of companies that argue that the government should be protecting us from this information. That's what we pay our taxes for. And really, the challenge is based off of our basic rights as a country, and the fact that we don't want our government to have access to all of that information. We need to take this on, and companies need to take this on themselves. It's the only solution. So what the government's been doing in many industries, and now we're seeing very strongly being pushed into the DoD, is these kinds of really incentivized regulations and frameworks that companies need to comply to, whether that's in power and utility space with NERC, where energy companies will get very large fines if they don't comply to this, or in with the case of CMMC, having auditors come in, you're not actually able to bid on contracts without winning that or proving your compliance to this. And while it's definitely a challenge for a lot of these organizations to understand it, and that's what we're looking to help with through our partnership with you and our software and some of the other partners that are helping companies in the MassMEP and in Massachusetts manufacturing through this process. We are also giving them that business kind of cybersecurity as a business problem lens, right? So while you're handling all this compliance information, you're also putting risk information into this software platform with our partners. So you're understanding where your largest gaps lie, really trying to drive more information around return on security investment. So actually coming up with some financial modeling around these kind of complex controls and systems to be able to put it into business terms. And ultimately that's our goal, is to be able to help folks with these compliance initiatives, but also really help them understand their cyber risk as digitization is taking over, and people really need to pay attention to it, because we're hearing every day about companies in the DoD supply chain that are getting hacked for their IP or helps through some kind of ransomware, or really all kinds of attacks happening. So it's been a great partnership for us to be a part of it, and to work with you guys closely. I think it really highlights the challenge at a higher level and the approach that the government's trying to push out to have that private sector, public sector partnership, where we work with you guys on a lot of the grant funding. We've come up with solutions that ultimately these organizations can own directly. So we don't have access to that data, or the government doesn't have access to their data.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, that's the other thing is, you know, having some way of quickly and easily proving your security posture and you know your risk assessment, that kind of stuff is handy, especially when it comes to either entertaining, you know, a customer and proving to them that their data is safe, or being audited for CMMC when that eventually happens, and that whole gap analysis. It's the whole where do you start that I think intimidates people, and I totally understand that, because I have the same issue when I go into my basement, and when I declutter stuff, it's like, where do I start? There's just so much stuff, and really. You know, having a formalized methodology of going through and just start here, and just work your way down. And the things that you wouldn't necessarily think to even look at or think or even something you should address, you know, it's all spelled out basically in these frameworks. It gives you a guideline and then some of the stuff is open to interpretation, of course, but it gives you a way to analyze where you want to be and where you are currently and what it takes to get from where you are to where you want to be. And that's really what we're trying to help with. And our goal is to demystify this for our clients and to just make it approachable and understandable and de-risk the mitigation, because it's if it's expensive work to do, then we can get the funding to help out with that. And like you said, just we can either cover half the cost or in some cases all the cost of the gap analysis and the mitigation roadmap, and then a partial or a certain length of time subscription to the platform. And there are multiple platforms out there to use, but I mean, it's one of those things where you got to have something to manage this on an ongoing basis, because it's going to be a living, breathing, document, if you will. And it's a combination of policy and procedure and technical doodads.
One piece on that as well, Rich, you mentioned kind of the where to start, and that's obviously a challenge that we're used to working with our customers on. And I know we've had some really kind of develop some stronger partner relationships that are really handling a lot of this work with you guys. And as they've gone through more of these engagements, I think one thing that's been nice for me to see is really that process of where to start being kind of finalized. And it's pretty efficient now, where they typically are sending over a basic questionnaire, getting some basic information, getting that into the system, and then going from there in more of a tiered approach. So it's not super cumbersome at the early stages of the partnership and engagement. And then as you go along, you get into more detail, but it's been nice to see that we've been able to cut down some of the time that it takes to get this information, really streamline that process. Obviously doing it remote has created another challenge, but the Zoom has been working pretty well for us with our clients. So it's been good to see that process becoming more efficient as well.
Yeah, I agree. It has changed the world a little bit. I mean, it's even from a trade show and conference standpoint. I mean, companies have realized that they can, for less money and time, they can reach a broader audience, using platforms like Zoom, than to drive a bunch of equipment to a building, set it up, stand around for 3 days, and hopefully you talk to people that wander in who aren't just looking for candy. what are you guys seeing for the low-hanging fruit when you're doing one of these assessments and determining the gap analysis? What are the, I mean, obviously, passwords, people need to have passwords on their systems, they need to have locks on the doors and that kind of stuff. But what are the top three things that you're finding that companies don't necessarily have a grip on and need to be addressed immediately? Jim, start with you.
Well, with a lot of these initiatives, one of the processes that or an issue that comes up repeatedly is that of a process, the lack of a process, the understanding of what activity takes place, who is responsible for it, the do's and don'ts. So if you don't have properly defined protocols, you could have the most secure IT system in the world. But if I click on an attachment that I receive on an email because of the lack of policy, the lack of understanding, the lack of awareness, it doesn't matter, I'm going to cause damage. So I find that to be an issue is awareness, it's training, it's processes in place that clearly defines the do's and don'ts, the how-tos. That usually is a good starting point. All the other things, just follow with it.
How about you guys, Derek, Pat?
Yeah, I would say the same. I think immediately that makes me think of one area of the platform that I know we've talked about before, Rich, around our optimizations tab. And the way that we look at it is based off of NISC methodology, giving a lowest cost, highest impact analysis of your controls that you can go after to remediate and get some quick wins as you're going through this process. So that's what I would think about. And I'd think about it through NIST, kind of the NIST thought process of people, process, and technology, where a lot of these controls are really applicable to, I think as Jim was mentioning, some of the more people and process oriented information that and procedures that you can update and become compliant to pretty quickly. And then as we all know in cyber, a lot of this is technology dependent as well. So that's kind of the next step. But I think I'd reiterate what Jim said around some of those kind of common people process controls that we look to start with.
People are the weakest link typically. And oddly enough, you can't idiot proof people. It's kind of interesting how that works. And also on that, in the same regard, I've noticed that the phishing attacks are getting a little more sophisticated. It used to be that they were full of misspellings and horrible grammar and that kind of stuff. And it was like, oh, okay, this is fake. But now they're actually doing a better job of looking legit, and they're using different attack vectors like Google Docs and Google Sheets, that kind of stuff. There's a few new exploits. I don't know. What do you think are, I don't know. This has to be viewed, I think, from a, really, it's impossible to do an ROI because a lot of companies just consider this another expense. But I think that it has to be viewed more as a business advantage, really, and it has to be.
Rich, if I can talk about that expense issue,
absolutely.
What's more expensive? Finding yourself compromising data
losing your business?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Potentially put you out of business or be sued, et cetera, or criminal issues, et cetera, depending on what transpires versus the cost of being proactive. So it's a trade-off over here that you could be proactive or end up being reactive, a choice that only organizations can make for themselves.
Yeah, it's the same with the continuous improvement stuff too. It's you can try to be more efficient, or you can not. if you don't, your competitors are going to, or at least some of them, and you'll be left in the dust eventually by trying to hide from this.
I think my biggest fear for companies working in the DoD is that they're going to miss out on contracts. So being proactive and making sure that you're not behind the ball when you need to get audited and CMMC starts coming out, it's going to give people a huge leg up in terms of business advantage, because I'm sure that a lot of your competitors aren't going to quite be up to par as you might be if you're working through Mass MEP and really getting ahead of things on this assessment.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And the CMMC certification level is going to be made public. So anybody can go and look to see if you've been certified yet, at what level, as opposed to having to call you and saying, are you compliant? Do we need to do this? So that's going to be an easy sort of badge of honor for companies to get and to and to promote. And even if you're, if your clients don't need CMMC or don't need you to be CMMC certified, it does look better. You know, it's like any sort of like UL compliance on a toaster. You know, you don't want to buy a toaster that's not UL certified, right? Because you could save $50 and burn your house down. So I think, you know, this has been good. I think, I hope our attendees are getting something out of this. And if you have any questions, you know, please feel free to post them. Haley is monitoring our Facebook Live feed, as far as I know. Any questions from that?
I will reinforce what Patrick said. A big push to this has been with the clients we've been working with, has been future orders. People are being faced with, what are you doing about information security? Do you have a system in place? And 27,000 NIST 800, CMMC, et cetera, they're all showing up as combinations or individual requirements on RFQs, where companies are faced with the dilemma of having to upgrade their systems with some form of information security. So we've been seeing that driving it. Very few companies are doing this on their own right now.
Well, yeah. Yeah, because a lot of companies don't do anything unless they absolutely have to. Yeah. And again, it's not out of laziness or trying to avoid it. It's just they don't have the time. They don't. It's not a priority because they've got to keep their business running. But yeah, like you said, this is one of those things where you're going to have to, you know, just like you put a roof on your building, you know, and you've got locks on your doors and that kind of stuff. It's got to be something that just kind of becomes ingrained in your corporate culture and just every day. Otherwise, it's not going to happen. I think we're coming up on our. All right, the 2-minute warning. Any last words? Any last thoughts that might, you know, inspire people?
I don't know if you touched on it, Rich, but take advantage of the additional grant funding would be my words.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I opened up saying this, you know, we are your tax dollars at work. Yeah, it's use MassMEP. It's not a shameless plug. I mean, this is we have funding available. We've put programs together. We have the ability to help companies and have it not cost them nearly as much, or in some cases it could be free for depending on what they're doing. It's use it. It's the money comes out of the unemployment insurance that companies are paying, comes out of payroll taxes, and this is something that we're trying to give back to the manufacturing community because it's our job to do that. All right.
Just a little shameless plug. We've got Jim doing a little ISO internal auditor training next month as well. So there's always that out there. And if you're a small company and you're under 100 employees, and you, just like Rich was saying, you can go out and you can get registered with a small business direct access program. We call it SPDAP. So that's why I had to get through the SPDAP, the acronym there. But if you go get registered with them and you have a valid certificate of good standing with the Department of Revenue under 100 employees, you can attend that training at no charge. There's no cash flow obligations to any of these companies whatsoever. So, you know, it's out there. If you need to talk to somebody with us and find out how to get it, that's what we're here for. So.
Yeah. And these 1-hour webinar information sessions that we put on, these aren't the training. These are designed to sort of explain what the trainings really do. And most of our training programs are 3 to 5 days, sometimes longer, depending on what you're looking to get trained on. And it's not just training, it's hands-on training. And you know, we walk you through actual the work, you know, whether it's creating a lean program or cybersecurity program or marketing program. You know, it's it's the full vote.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Thanks, guys. For joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks for setting it up.
And hopefully this will live out on the Facebook Live interwebs for a long time for people to look at.
Yeah. Thanks for, joining us. It was just a fun little way for us to be able to have a little, what we call table talk about what's going on today. And like Rich said at the beginning, everybody's webinared out their slide, no more slides, please. No more
table talk is a client. Slides,
so.
They make pies.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. A little good Massachusetts reference there.
I had to jump for 12 o'clock, but thank you guys.
All right.
Yeah, thanks
for having us. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks,
guys.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, take care.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Enjoy Halloween if it happens.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's 2020. Anything's possible.
Yeah. Yeah. So, thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Yeah, right, thanks, everyone out there. All right. Thanks, Rich. Appreciate it. Good job today.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for the MassMEP Manufacturing Podcast. You can subscribe to our channel on iTunes or Spotify. Join us next week as we do a throwback to our top 10 podcasts for 2020. We'll see you next week in our space, your space, or cyberspace.
Thank you so much for listening to MassMEP's Manufacturing Podcast, Transforming Manufacturing Enterprises. To listen to more of MassMEP's podcasts or for more information on how MassMEP, your resource for manufacturing greatness, can help you, please visit massmep.org.